You're listening to the Festival Daily Buzz with Bitch Talk Podcast on KCPW and KCPW.org. And we are on location at the Slam Dance Film Festival headquarters on historic Main Street in Park City. I'm your host, John Wildman, and joining me this morning at Slam Dance and Sundance are my co-hosts from Bitch Talk, Aaron Lim and Angela Tabora. We are back on the Festival Daily Buzz with Bitch Talk Podcast on KCPW and KCPW.org. I'm your host, John Wildman, and we have a special segment, which we have my friend, Andy Timoner, here, and we have, guys, introduce yourselves.
I'm David Turner.
David Turner, and Zach?
Zach Bidner.
Okay, and the reason we're doing this segment is because, Andy, your latest film, it is not right now screening at Sundance or Slam Dance. But we are having special screenings, super secret screenings here, and filmmakers have done this in the past, and you are, of course, a cherished veteran of Park City, and so I really wanted to get your perspective, as well as your producers, on what you guys are doing up here. What's going on?
So, we made a movie about the opioid epidemic. It's not quite done. Excuse me, I lose my voice every Sundance. It's usually some late night loud party. Last night it was XTR. Anyway, over the last 2.5 years, we've been filming people at the front lines of recovery to try to make something really positive and awesome that will actually help mobilize people to connect around this and around addiction without the stigma. And we're not quite done with the film yet, so it's not like officially here, but we're doing private preview screenings, just a couple of them, because there's a lot of really innovative work being done in the Utah legislature around opioid addiction. And part of that is like a modeled in our film. You guys need to talk.
We're going to let the guys come in here.
I think what Andy's touching on is, for us, it was really important that because of this is an issue and our goal with this film is to actually make some positive change, to be able to show the film and activate people who want to make that change. So I think it served us in this case, which so far these screenings have gone exceptionally well, to generate some energy around that purpose. And that can also, because we have to keep it private and avoid, you know, premiere issues as we finish the film, we can kind of energize on all fronts. But I think for us, it was a really great opportunity to put our mission first, and getting everyone together excited about this film has been a great opportunity for us.
And we've also like raised tens of thousands of dollars in the last 24 hours. People have been crying and working together so we can bring the movie to the people that need it most. So we're going to do a whole outreach program with it so that it's not one of these traditional docs that kind of opens and closes in a cinema and sprays it out there and hopes for the best. We're going to go to where the problem is, which is really everywhere, but there's a lot of organizations, a lot of people that have lost family members around this, and a lot of people who, as you'll learn in the film from Mike Moore, are walking around and not admitting that they have the problem, and they might be able to come out after seeing this film. It's a really powerful film.
Most people actually have healthcare and access to treatment who suffer from this issue, but unfortunately the stigma is such that they don't want to tell their bosses, they don't want to tell their families that they're struggling with this, and they don't seek the help they need. So we're, as Andy said, we're incredibly proud. She's made a wonderful, wonderful film that I think people are going to really resonate with. And we see this as you see in this film, it's a community problem and it's also a community solution. And if we go take this film to people who are activated and believe in it and believe in the solution, we can make some change. And I think we're going to see that.
And let's talk about really quickly, and David, let's have you jump in on this one. Let's talk about the business of what we're doing. Because, you know, when you're not a veteran of Park City, you're coming up here for Sundance and Slam Dance, whatever, and you go, what? So you can just screen your movie somewhere, and people, and you go, what? How does that work? And why are you doing that? And so talk about that a little bit, about, you know, the kind of the strategy of doing the screenings here.
I might punt this one to Audie, because this is kind
so of we her, are her. we are all friends of Geraldine Dreyfus. Geraldine founded the Utah Film Center. She also founded Impact Partners. She's an incredibly powerful force in the documentary world for good. When she sees a film that she knows is going to help hundreds of thousands of people, she gets behind it. So she's come on as an executive producer. And she, you know, knows everybody in this town. So we've been screening at the finest establishments. Like, it's beautiful. really like as gorgeous as it gets. And the vibe has just been beautiful. And then people are coming and they know that we haven't finished the film. We need money to finish it. So they're giving contributions to the film. So it's been just super fruitful.
It's been, I think, one of the amazing things that Geralyn's been able to help us architect here and with Andy and their very long-term friendship and partnership is creating an environment for people to attend something that feels special and important and interesting, both from the film's perspective, to get people excited about a film that we need to finish and that needs to kind of have generate some buzz and get there to get finished, but also about the issue. So, you know, I think that's been one of the really awesome things we've been able to do here with these screenings is these are all folks who are touched by this issue here in Park City, here in Salt Lake, in Utah, and want to talk about this in a meaningful way.
Yeah, and I mean, as having won the festival twice opens a lot of doors also. So coming back here and also just like having been part of the Institute for, you know, I was at the director's lab with Mapplethorpe 2010. So all my mentors and these mountains have always conspired to help my career. And it's no different now. It's like home.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
It's beautiful.
All right, then let's talk about another aspect of this, because you guys touched on this with the fact that this is still, the film is not finished. Obviously, this is not an official screening at all because it's not in the festival, but it's also not finished. But the truth is, when you have a film and you start presenting it, that premiere status is incredibly important. And, you know, and where you choose to world premiere your film, where you choose to do that, really can shape the arc that film is going to take, the journey that film is going to take. So let's have one of our producer guys, David, I'll try for you again.
Okay, sure.
But talk about that. Talk about the conversations that you have. Talk about that strategy of how you kind of protect that premiere and utilize it to the best purposes of the film.
Sure.
You want to take a stab at it?
Well, sure. Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I don't know that we discussed it. Like, part of the reason that we want to premiere here in Salt Lake City is because of the connection with the story to Salt Lake City, right? Much of the storyline involved, I don't know if you know that, but Salt Lake City, Utah, was fourth highest in the nation in the opioid crisis. Now it's like 21st, I think. So like we really wanted to have that connection.
Yeah.
It's like some of the most progressive legislator.
It's absolutely a community-based thing, as we said for the film. I think and that's important for us to do something here to generate that energy around the issue, like Dave said. But as you said, it is definitely. You know, there's a strategy to this. Andy and Dave know this very well. There's a strategy to how you do this circuit and how you navigate, especially an independent film or independent documentary like this. I think, you know, for us, the goal is to have the widest audience so that people can really react to this and understand this issue and be motivated to change.
Right.
And I think there's a number of ways to get there. You know, I think a lot of people, especially the time of year that, you know, Slam Dance and Sundance happen, think it's you know, that or nothing. But one of the amazing things I think we've seen with this plan of kind of letting our film get there when we're ready and finishing this the right way is generating the right energy to carry us to where the right premiere place will be.
So then we do a kind of almost like a grassroots groundswell here,
yep.
and then we take it into a market festival.
It's clear from these screenings there's going to be no stopping this film. Like, people need it. It's giving them something that no film about addiction or an epidemic has ever given. So it's very important. It's beautiful. It's animated, a lot of it. There's all these characters interwoven. There's all this data, history of the epidemic, what it does to your body. It's like one-stop shopping. But also, like, it's death-defying, but it's also hopeful. So it's a very unique film. And I think it's just going to be finding its way. I mean, I wish there wasn't, to be honest, this whole premiere wait thing. Like, I feel like some of these regional festivals are some of the most powerful places to reach people. And I just don't like that. Like, right now we have invitations outstanding, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been able to say, we haven't been able to say yes to them. We were kind of holding and holding and holding and trying to figure out ways to still share the film because we have to wait for the big premiere.
Yeah.
And that I think that system needs to be overthrown, but we can talk about that on another radio show.
That'll be a separate segment.
Yeah.
But, you know, of course, I'm a big proponent of the regional film festival circuit and how it can benefit films. And we don't have much time, but I do want to finish up and Andy, because I'm loving hearing you talk with the voice. but let's talk about this film very quickly in relation to your past films, because you know the difference between doing a doc that is entertainment or a profile of a person or musical artist or whatever versus a mission or in the dock. It's a very different direction. And it makes the three of you by default also water carriers of that mission.
Yeah.
So talk about that.
A love fest. This film is really about the pain that's underneath addiction. We all have so much pain, but as a society, we don't treat it well. We don't treat mental health on the level that we treat physical health. We don't treat physical health well in this country either. But mental health is really something that is not shared equally, treatment for mental health and treatment. So insurance companies don't cover treatment. All kinds of charlatans are involved in treatment. There's all kinds of nooks and crannies to this world, but the fact of the matter is there's millions of Americans walking around right now addicted and living half lives. And if I can help one of them, I already have. We already have. But if we can, I think we can help hundreds of thousands of people with this film. So I am so happy to go out there and do that. And I also think the film is so entertaining. I mean, you see, it's a for me, you know, like a lot of my films are like 7 years or 5 years or whatever. Brand, I think, was five. Dig was seven. We Live in Public, 10. This is 2.5. But the mayor becomes congressman. There's all these representatives. The state representative becomes state senator. We're looking at policymakers who are touched personally by opioid addiction, who then go and make the most revolutionary policies in America. So you're learning about this stuff, but from a really personal, dramatic perspective. And the stories are interwoven. One of the second in command in the military is in the film. I mean, it's like, it's real heavy hitters. And they're saying, you know what? We've got to talk about this. And it's powerful. So they let us in. And they'll love the movie. So, you know, when you say like, yeah, I make these portraits. So I've made these portraits of brilliant people who are also troubled. And they are all about issues. Even Cool It, which is about climate change, is about Bjorn Lundberg, who's also a very controversial figure. The difference with this one is they're all super behind it, and they will drop everything. I mean, Congressman Ben McAdams will drop anything to make it happen on Capitol Hill. Like, he had the characters there. He showed clips, like it was in July or something, because this film can really mobilize. And so it's so awesome for once to be with a film that your subjects are coming off the screen and standing there and saying, let's talk about it. Like today, Mayor
Jenny Wilson.
Yeah, Jenny Wilson was talking about seeing a guy overdosing on the sidewalk 2 days ago, and her friend had naloxone on her and saved the guy's life. And she just told that story on stage at 9 a.m. at this private screening.
Well, I'm very excited that we got to preview this and really kind of help you guys start the public conversation on the film. So I wish you guys great luck.
Thank you. And
I'm looking very forward to having this at festivals that I'm at throughout the country.
Thank you so much, John.
Thank you.
Well, thank you again.
Have a happy Sunday.
We've had David, Zach, and Andy on the program. It's been wonderful talking to you.
Thank you.
Thanks, John. Thank you.
The Festival Daily Buzz would like to thank the following businesses for their support: Ketos Brewing, Pro Bar, The Market in Park City, and The Social Study in San Francisco.
We are back on the Festival Daily Buzz with Bitch Talk Podcast on KCPW and KCPW.org. I'm your host, John Wildman, here with my teammate from Bitch Talk, Angela Tabora. And right now we're going to talk about the slam dance film, Beware of Dog. We have, and hopefully I do them service on their names, Nadia Bidzonova. Yes? No, that wasn't right. Nadia, tell us your name.
Nadia Bidzonova.
Bidzonova, okay. And Lilith Abgarian.
Yes.
Okay. Nadia is the director. Lilith is a producer of Beware of Dog. And we always start this segment off by letting our director introduce our audience to the film. So Nadia, tell us what Beware of Dog is about.
Beware of Dog is a film about mental conditions portrayed by three characters from different countries, from Russia, United States, and Germany, in the era of a social media madness.
Okay, so we have three interweaving stories. And, you know, telling one story and getting the logistics correct on that is difficult enough. And these are also done so stylistically wonderfully.
Thank you.
You know, to be able to pull that off, Lil, I want to actually start with you as a producer of managing that kind of production.
Right.
Talk about how you went about doing that.
So we had a very low budget. It was mostly self-financed. And I think the most important part of it is just to have a crew that you trust, you know, people that you can be yourself. It was very important for us to capture performances that were very raw. So the whole crew are actually our friends. And, you know, we went to Moscow, we went to Berlin and New York. And it was a very intimate experience with everyone. It wasn't your typical film production experience, really. So it was, you know, we're very happy to put this project out in the world and share it with everyone.
And in a sense, as you were filming, Najid, was it almost like you were doing three separate films that then in the editing bay came together? I mean, how were you kind of intellectually, going after it?
Fragmented structure is actually kind of a part of my OCD, I think, of my obsessive compulsive disorder. I like multiple storylines happening at the same time. So I can't like keep my attention for 2 hours following one character. I'm bored. And I wanted to show the universality of us, of a sensitive person with mental disorder or like anxiety, depression. You know, we all have it in a way, and portraying it by three characters, I wanted to show the universality of that we all can relate to it. And living, experiencing two cultures, Russian and American, very closely, I'm also, like, I'm an immigrant, but I'm still Russian. I'm not American, but I'm not Russian either, because, you know. Mm-hmm. So combining all of that experience, I wanted to show.
Yeah, thank you. I think it is really important to give a face and a name to people, because we need to reverse the stigma that we have, right, you know, in the entire world, really. But the stigma that we have against mental illness, or because, like you said, it's something that we all can relate to. And giving a name and a face and layers to these people is just really important right now, because it's just as important, yet it's stigma. So thank you for that and putting that on the forefront and making it relatable.
Yes, thank you. You guys will enjoy you.
I wanted also to hear when you're dealing with something like, you know, showing dramatically OCD or bipolar or whatever, you know, there are intricacies involved in the details that we don't always get, because they're not always super cinematic, but they're real. And so, right, I would love for you to talk about, like, you know, the research and the kind of like the almost the quality control on set to make sure that you got it right, because I think he did, and mm-hmm. and it's so critical to do that.
I really like close-ups in cinematography, because it brings this intimate feeling, and we can breathe with the character, we can feel what she or he experiences in mind. I also like the voiceover to show what's in their head, for this better connection with the audience. I shot some of it by myself, because I was a cinematographer before, and that helped me a lot to get out of the characters the most that they could bring to the table. Mm-hmm. And for example, with Body Duress, it was so important to be just like three of us,
yeah,
because he opened his inner demons to us, and I know that he wouldn't be able to do that if we had like 10, 20, 30 people on set. And that really helped. And I'm really proud that what we did. And that's very important.
I mean, yeah, and here we have a unique opportunity to look, because you're in three different, vastly different locations, three different settings. Which was the bigger challenge? Which location was the bigger challenge to shoot?
I would say Moscow was the most challenging in terms of, for example, we had a scene during the protests where Nadia literally drove into the protest on the car, and it was, you know, you can actually get to jail for
wow.
that. So we really took some risks during the Moscow production. But, you know, every production has its own things. You know, with dealing with Buddy Duress was such a crazy experience because he's such a right character. You know, he has a very interesting background. He used to be in jail for 10 times. He used to be an ex-heroin addict. He used to be homeless. So you can imagine what kind of person we were dealing with while shooting. So, you know, yeah, every production has its things. So.
Just a little anecdote about the protest. So our co-producer, Olya Korovkina from Moscow, she drove my car and I was shooting, sitting on the front seat and shooting the SWAT, the guys, like, trying to push the crowd. And the crowd was pushing our car from the back. I was like, guys, like, go drive on them. So we could just start a revolution there.
Wow. You should have been filming. Someone should have been filming you doing that. Yeah. That's crazy.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I have the footage of them pushing the car and the guys from the front. Like, guys, like, but we pretended just to be stupid bitches who went to the center of Moscow to get some brunch or whatever. Like, oh, we didn't know.
Yeah, what's going on here? Hey, use it to your strength. Whatever works, you know? Yeah, whatever gets you in through. Exactly. Well, I do love how the locations really play a character in the film as well, especially when you're dealing with the sense of loneliness and isolation within the confines of a large city.
Right.
So that was a really great contrast when it comes to, you know, thinking of mental illness and how it's a perception, it's your own personal perception of being lonely in a busy, lively city. So that dichotomy was really nice to me too, like just to add to this feeling that they and to be relatable.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are surrounded by millions but still feel isolated, especially in New York when everyone is a self-concentrated individual and pushing for their career and social media appearance. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to find a community of soul thinkers.
Soulmates, yeah.
Soulmates. Like we met with Lilith, it was like...
Yeah, we clicked right away. It's
how did you meet? Happened.
We met at the Metrograph Movie Theater. Should check it out. Yeah. If you're in New York, it's they show 35mm movies. And that's actually a place where I met Safdie Brothers, who then introduced me to Buddy Duress, who's been in Good Time and Heaven Knows What. Mm-hmm. And we met so many amazing people there, and, you know, it became our hub. So that's where we met, and right away we started working on a script and started filming right away.
Something else I looking forward to having you both talk about is the sound design in the film.
Yeah.
Because the sound design is done really wonderfully and how you utilize that to tie the stories together. So I would love for you to talk about your approach to that.
Mm-hmm. Very grateful to have Stas Paushev, the Russian sound designer, on board, who did this amazing job and put everything together, because sometimes with the sound we had some on-set problems, especially like with Buddy. We didn't know how to expect from him, so it was, sometimes it was challenging. And we had amazing composers, Julian Stetter from Germany, and Rev Hughes from California. So, it just all came together thanks to Stas in Moscow. Universal crew, the best.
Yeah.
Well, we want to wrap this up pretty quickly, but I would also like, because again, you know, it's rare that we have three very different locations, three stories that, and can you talk about, because we'll do this and then one section will surprise us and kind of become a more of a focal point in the film, but the film that you have is incredibly balanced. So I would love for you to talk both as a producer and a director, when you're in the editing bay, when you're like looking at the footage to go, the whole movie could be this section because it's so strong, versus, we're going to interweave this and take this one back a little bit. Mm-hmm. Talk about that process.
I think we have to credit our great editor, Tom Knight, who did a great job editing this movie, because we had so much footage and it really came together all in the editing room. So I would say it's
I like to interconnect stories and have the characters be in touch with each other or like meet. at some point. My previous short film, my last short film, Things I Like About You, was about the relationships, different four stages of relationships, shown through different couples, mm-hmm. also in different countries. But it was from the meeting to actual relationships break up in the end. But that was all one story that we mm-hmm. all experienced, but through different couples. And I wanted to bring this experience to Beware of Dog mm-hmm. as a structure, because I still think it's really nice to show one storyline, but through multiple characters, because we all can relate to the subjects of relationships and anxiety.
A director who can successfully juggle. He's done very well. Again, the film is Beware of Dog, another one of the great titles at Slamdance this year. We've been talking to Nadja and Lilith. It's been wonderful to have you both here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us, guys.
The Festival Daily Buzz is brought to you in partnership with Films Gone Wild. You can find more info at filmsgonewild.com.
We are back on the Festival Daily Buzz with Bitch Talk Podcast on KCPW and kcpw.org. I'm your host, John Wildman, and on this segment, we're going to be talking about the slam dance film Sanzaru. We have our director, Zai Magnus, here. Zai, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Hi. Great to be here.
Okay, tell our audience, what is Sanzaru about?
It's about a nurse who's taking care of a woman who's slowly dying with dementia, and they are on an isolated Texas estate, and the nurse starts to think that maybe her own mother is trying to contact her.
You know, it's funny, whenever I ask our filmmakers to introduce the film, in a case like yours, I always wonder, what the filmmaker's going to say, because there's so much to say describing what's going on with this movie.
Yeah.
You have, a rural family story, you have an immigrant story, you have a ghost story, you have all of this all weaved in together. So let's start by talking about how you keep all that straight and manage that so an audience doesn't get lost and they're going on the journey that you want them to go on.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something we thought about a lot as we were making it and as we were writing it. We have I guess one of the strongest things we have going in there is that we have these two worlds. We show you the spirit world and the physical world of the house, that's not a spoiler or anything, that's like right up front. So you get to see the world or hear and feel and experience the spirit world and the physical world. And so I think that really helped us keep everything kind of focused, because it framed it with the two planes of existence that at least I think exist. And it gave us a richer kind of access into the history and psychology of our lead character, because we got to delve into her spiritual life as well.
Well, as I was watching it, I was like going, if I was describing to somebody, and I was saying, it's like this, rural, kind of southern tale. But it also reminded me much about like Uncle Boonmi,
Absolutely,
to your great credit, I was like going, how do these mix? But they do. So let's talk about the translation of that, because again, that is not necessarily an American. Or or something that we see filmmaking wise here, that style of a peach upon, going into the storytelling, so clearly that was what you were aiming for, but let's talk about the filmmaker angst that we all go through uh-huh. as we're doing this is like is this going to translate? Uh-huh. Are people going to talk about that? I would love to hear you.
Yeah, you mean just about like how I like the struggle to bring it to kind of. To work,
yes,
to life.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
I think for me, I'm an avid film watcher and I love watching films and I love, Pitch Punk's films, and they definitely had a big influence on me. And I guess, I'm, as a filmmaker, I'm really interested in tone and mood. And I think as a film watcher, I find it a very meditative experience. So I think I was really like, you know, the narrative drive was really important to me, but at the end of the day, I think, you know, I find watching a film an experience. So to me, that's almost mostly tone, right? And so I really focused on that. I tried to just have like what it kind of, this feeling of what it feels like to be alone in the, like in the forest or just like out, you know, kind of with lost in your own thoughts, sort of a lonely feeling for sure. And then I brought in the horror elements into that because I felt like they worked well together.
Right. But, you know, and just, you know, to for our audience who has not seen the film,
yeah.
You know, we're not talking like, you know, a gory horror or anything like that. No, but we are talking about, you know, the unsettling kind of ethereal get under your skin type of thing, which was what I also wanted to hear you talk about. And that is like the building of tension, the building mm-hmm. of dread before, like in this case, you also have, you know, a reveal that we're not necessarily expecting either. So talk about the art of doing that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is an art, you know, and it's something that I sort of had to learn as I was going, you know, because I don't think there's any right way to do it. I mean, I think the most effective way is with the build is just the, you know, breadcrumbs on the way. And you try and you hope you put them in the right spot. But it's always, and the right amount of information, you know, the flow of information to the audience. I don't know if I succeeded or not, but I tried my best. And, you know, and in the editing process, we worked on that a lot. I mean, my editor, Josh Lee, and I worked on that a lot. Was like, you know, do we put this little breadcrumb of information here, or do we put it here, or do we not put it at all? Or, you know, how much do we have the, you know, do we cut this line off because it's giving too much away? Because I always wanted to walk that line of, that thin line of, you know, not too much exposition, but also you don't want to leave the audience too much in the dark. You want to just be just ahead of the audience. So, yeah.
And there's also the idea of, you know, again, whenever we're talking about something that is within the genre realm, you know, whether it's full on horror or not, we're talking about effects. And, you know, and like with a ghost story like this, we're going, you know, on one end of the spectrum, we have like, you know, things like The Conjuring and things like that, Insidious and things like that, as far as like ghosts and demons, whatever.
Yeah.
And then again, we have something like Uncle Boonmi, which again is much more of a dreamlike, much more of a, you know, is it really happening or is that in our heads? And you definitely opted toward one of
yes.
those. So talk about that, about the intellectual decision of how your approach you thought worked for the story that you wanted to tell.
Yeah, well, you know, when I approached it, like, I didn't think I wanted to actually explore a ghost story as an experience, right? And I think, you know, whatever you think of like the manifestation of ghosts, I think at the end of the day, whether they're real or not, just like anything else, they are a subjective experience. So I kind of wanted to clue the audience in that, like, each of these characters is having their own subjective experience of a spiritual manifestation, because I think it will look different for everybody else. You know, I don't think a demon or a ghost or anything like that, you know, is going to look the same to one person. So I wanted them to look different for each person, and I thought it would be effective. An effective way to do that would be to make it more surreal. So like what you're not saying to someone who hasn't seen it is that like the manifestations of the spirits they feel artificial, like intentionally, I would say. You know, they're not, we didn't try to like make a CGI that
right.
like completely blended it in there. You know, it kind of feels laid over the top, and it feels almost like a practical, and most of them are practical effects. And you know, we use a lot of lights and mostly sound really at the end of the day, but we do have a couple, you know, more integrated effects. Yeah, so I think that was my approach, and I think Uncle Boonmi does that really, really well.
Right, right. All right, and now let's transition into people actually seeing the film.
Yes.
We've not brought this up to the live filmmakers we've talked to, but we actually decided to do this segment because our friends at Slamdance said, this thing went over like gangbusters, and it had like, you know, big audience reaction. We've got to talk about it. So
Thank you.
Let's talk about that. You had a huge reaction.
Yeah, I mean, it was great to be in an audience. I mean, that was definitely, you know, I've seen it with some smaller, you know, test audiences and stuff like that along the way. But this was the first time I'd seen it with, like, a big audience, and it was great to see the reactions. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's the biggest win, right, is if the audience is engaged, if they're reacting, and if you get something out of them, you know? And so, and that's why I love genre films, is because I think they're so pure in that sense. It's sort of like if you're scared, you're engaged and you're watching it and you're fully there. So I do hope that it can, you know, reach more audiences like that.
But I'd have to ask you though, you're in the audience, you're watching this with them.
Yeah.
You know, at one point did you say, oh, I'm okay? You know, like, yeah.
Never.
With comedy, you go, well, they're laughing or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is not that kind of film. So you're picking up on the energy of the audience.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're going, oh, no, they're with me. They're with us.
Yeah, that's actually a good question. I think in retrospect what it was, I don't think it was subconscious, but afterwards I realized it was when some of the people in certain seats were having a hard time seeing there's a few lines of dialogue in Tagalog. With subtitles, and some of the people in the specific seats couldn't see it very well, and they were all leaning, like the whole, like, you know, group of them was like leaning in, and I was like, okay, so they're like, they need to know what it's saying, and then so I was like, okay, I did my job.
I've talked oftentimes about being in audiences, and you go, because especially for genre filmmakers, film fans, you go to a film, and you're like, is this the one, and you feel everybody's seat back up, no, this isn't the one,
yeah,
right, and this is the opposite of that, like, because they're into it, and,
yeah.
All right, again, we've been talking about Cenzaro, which you've been, Magnus, the director, a big hit at Slamdance. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you. You too. Thanks for having me.
The Festival Daily Buzz is brought to you in partnership with Bitch Talk Podcast. You can find more info at bitchtalkpodcast.com.
You're listening to the Festival Daily Buzz. I'm your host, Angela Tabora, joined by my co-host, Aaron Lim. Right now, we'd like to welcome to the show co-directors of the film Tapeworm, which is a slam dance film. We have Fabian Velasco and Milos Mitrovic. Thank you guys so much for being here. And if you want to introduce the film, let us know about Tapeworm. We can start with Fabian.
Yeah, sure.
We're ready to go.
Yeah. So, hi. Thank you for having us. Tapeworm is a feature film that we shot in Winnipeg, Canada. It's a 16mm film. It was self-funded by both of us, pretty much, mostly. We got a bit of money, but at the end of the production, pretty much. And it's a... I don't know how to describe it. It's an anti-comedy. It's been described as an anti-comedy about a series of people who are... disenchanted with their lives, I guess.
Yeah.
And is this, this is the absurd meeting reality little bit, but also is this written from real life experiences?
Yeah, I mean, I'm also in it. And I play this older person who lives with his mom still.
Okay. And I realized.
I'm not like that. I'm not like that in real life, but but there's some stuff in it that I found, like, because I'm not from Canada. I'm from Bosnia, and my parents, they're like immigrants, and so was I. And you know, they like to buy me clothes, and they want me to try it on for them. And at age 29, they were like still like, put on this shirt, walk for me. And I was like, this would be perfect for this movie because it's so sad. There's something so sad about that, like a 29-year-old man walking for his parents, and then my mom or my dad would be like, let me see if your toes are too big, like are your feet too big for your shoes and stuff like that. And I'm just sitting there being like, oh, this is so pathetic. I have to move out. And I finally did.
Yay.
But you didn't inspire me maybe to start eating pizza in a bath. So,
yeah. That was inspired by Harmony Korine's movie Gummo. We just wanted to kind of do a throwback.
Yeah, that was a little homage. Yeah.
There was like a person in it who eats spaghetti or something in a bathtub.
Okay. And then he drops chocolate in the water.
Yeah.
It felt a little Seinfeld too, because I don't know if you watch Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Big
Kramer making a salad in the shower.
Yeah.
Well, no, and that's the thing. Like, so many eccentricities of these characters. Yeah. I'm like, this has to be based on real life situation, maybe not you personally, but the open in particular, I wanted to bring up. She doesn't want me to talk about it, but the open.
Be a little light-handed here.
Okay, yeah. It's. I thought it was really funny. I don't know. He has an incident out in public, which you know we can kind of relate to. We did this trek in Annapurna in Nepal.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to go outdoors and then meeting the couple. I don't know. I was like this. Where does this come from, this story? It was so odd, and I was like, okay, I have to talk about this film.
Yeah, for the intro, I mean, I feel like when we were thinking about the movie, we had that image in our heads of like this person stumbling upon this couple kind of on a mattress after, you know, defecating in a forest.
I mean, it felt natural.
Yeah, and then, the thing is, like, the way that we thought of that was that we were kind of sick ourselves.
Well, we were both kind of going through a health issue, is very similar, you know. I don't want to TMI. I don't want to be TMI, but like what happens in the movie, it's similar to like what was happening to both of us, weirdly enough. And then we started like to diagnose ourselves. And then at one point, I convinced myself that I had tapeworm. And then he was going to the doctor because he had blood in, you know,
in my stool.
You guys should have been filming each other. I know. It should have been a great film, too.
But then also the scene of the mattress, we shot a music video that had kind of like a similar kind of scene. And then so like we kind of took from our own.
And there's like a very, I think, well-known picture of this couple on a mattress in like a junkyard. And this band that we did a music video for, they bought that front cover for their album. And then we were like, let's recreate that for the music video. And then we were doing it and we were like, oh, we got to put this in a feature in the beginning.
In a different setting.
Like you see that as an audience member, you see a man, he has to go to the bathroom, goes to a forest, and then he has, you know, blood in his stool, kind of gross. And then he hears something, he goes, and then he sees this, you know, these people kind of making love on a mattress, and you're watching this and you're going, where the hell is this
where
going?
Then like you just want to cuddle. Why not?
Yeah.
I mean, if I just saw blood, you know, I'd want to cuddle. I'd want some comfort.
Exactly.
But that brings me to my favorite character, the comedian.
Yes.
I mean, Alex Atea, she would kill in San Francisco. That set was great.
It was, I was laughing.
I thought it was.
Yeah.
She's funny.
Those are all her jokes, too. She's a comedian. She's formerly from Winnipeg, but then she moved to Toronto, and then she's a comedian. That's her style, kind of like that's what she does. And we thought she was really funny, but we wanted her to not be funny in the movie.
But she ended up being really funny. And what I was talking to Paul from Slam Dance here earlier, and I was saying the movie's kind of meta because when she talks, like she does a certain kind of humor. It's an ironic style of humor, deadpan. Mm-hmm. And the movie itself, the style is that deadpan kind of humor that's almost like, is this funny or is this sad? I don't even know. And that's what her comedy style is. And that was just a chance that's what it ended up being, was we got her to do this and that's her style of comedy. And she's doing her jokes and the audience in the movie doesn't laugh, but then the audience in the theater laughs. So you're kind of laughing at her jokes, but the audience in this world doesn't find
it funny.
She's not
received as she should, I guess.
So it's like this weird multi-layered thing that you find after, like we weren't even thinking about that so much when we were shooting the movie, that afterwards when we were watching it with an audience, we were kind of like, whoa, people like are like dying of, they're laughing like big time for
and,
this.
And that was a good experience? Or were you just like...
No, it was great. Like we thought it was great.
Well,
because
it's good for her. Her set works now.
Yeah,
she knows.
Exactly.
Yeah, and can you actually dive in a little more to the casting? Because the film, at times I'm like, is this a documentary? Or is this not a documentary? Mm-hmm, Can you talk about the casting?
Yeah, so for casting, I mean, we've been making shorts for a while, and usually I act in them too. So we were kind of like, well, I'll play a character who lives with his mom and is just like, you know, plays video games and like kind of ekes resources from her and doesn't want to grow up, kind of like a tapeworm, a parasite.
Like a parasite.
And then we were kind of like, we really liked Alex. She was like kind of a bigger comedian in the scene in Winnipeg. And we approached her to be this character because we were really into Entertainment by Rick Alverson with Greg Turkington as like this comedian. We loved that whole thing. And then, of course, Adam Brooks, who's in Astron 6, he was here at Sundance actually with Chow Boys, a short film last year. We were always huge fans of his and he said he would be in it. But like we got a lot of non-actors Sam Singer, who's a actual musician from Winnipeg. We got him to be in it, to just be himself. And he would just show up on set kind of like, you know, like stoned and like doesn't know what's going on. And we'd make up the scene as we went along. We knew what we wanted to achieve in the scene, but we would kind of be like rehearsing and saying, why don't you say this? And they were saying stuff like Sam and Steph Barrington, who plays Sam's partner in the film. She had this story about this guy named Eric who invites this guy in and then he gives the whole family bed bugs. And that actually happened to a friend of ours named Eric. And we were talking about it before we shot.
And that was in my apartment we shot. And like, so like, it was also an attack on my own apartment. We're filming and then the scene is like, oh, this place has bed bugs. So that's a straight attack on my...
Yeah. So it is a documentary.
Yeah, sort of. About our lives.
We were influenced. We you know, mumblecore, you know, the verite, whatever, that kind of realistic kind of tone.
Yeah, life imitates art for sure. Well, I wanted to switch gears a little bit, and you guys self-funded this film. You know, it's really hard to get funding. It's really hard to get your work out there and to complete a project.
Yes.
But here you are premiering at Slam Dance. So can you just talk about the process and how you made it here?
For sure. So first off, you know, we self-funded pretty much the entire thing. It was about 30,000 that we can accumulate how much it cost, 15 and 15 between both of us. Mm-hmm. And then we got a grant from the Winnipeg Arts Council, which we have to say Winnipeg Arts Council gave us a $2,000 grant, and the film group, Winnipeg Film Group, gave us $2,000. But overall, we just wanted to make a feature, and we were just relentless. We just didn't want to, you know, stop.
Yeah, I guess we were like impatient. We just wanted to make it, and...
And then, of course, with the 16 millimeter, we shot it all on 16 millimeter film, which costs a lot of money.
A lot of money.
And we wanted to only shoot the first 5 minutes on 16, and then we shoot on VHS and shoot on multiple formats. But as soon as we finished shooting on 16 that day, and we watched the footage like a week later when we got it back, we said, you know what, screw it. Let's shoot the whole thing on 16, and we'll worry about money afterwards. Mm. Hence why I lived with my parents for so long.
No, I mean,
you gotta do what you gotta do.
That's so great, and I think that's a good story to hear for aspiring filmmakers. So a big theme of this film is detachment and loneliness, and you guys are really ruining my perception of happy-go-lucky Canadians, so thank you for that. You're supposed to be happier than Americans.
Yes.
No, it's miserable there.
It's really cold.
It's like in the architecture.
Not in all of Canada.
No.
Winnipeg,
like,
architecture,
awful.
And it's getting better, though. Winnipeg is getting much better, I think. I think the architecture is getting nicer. He doesn't like the new style architecture. I like it. The futuristic style, you know, all glass
like
windows.
Like modern, yeah, I hate
modernist,
like condo style.
I love it.
It's what's happening in San Francisco.
Like it's everywhere. Like I hate it. Like Toronto, Vancouver, it's all the same. Yeah,
because you don't know. It's like, oh, we could be anywhere.
Yeah. Exactly.
Sorry, we're on this team. On that happy note. Anyway.
Kidding. I love Winnipeg.
Go Canada.
It's my home.
Okay. Again, we've been speaking to Fabian Velasco and Milos Mitrovic of the film Tapeworm at Slam Dance. Thank you guys so much for being here. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
Awesome.
And that's a wrap on today's edition of the Festival Daily Buzz on KCPW and kcpw.org. This show is made possible with partnerships with the Slam Dance Film Festival, GoTo Productions, and KCPW Radio. In-kind donations are provided by Pro Bar, Keto's Brewing, and The Market, Park City. Our audio producer is Charlene Goto, social media help was provided by Shoshana Howard, and assisting us in production are Chris Gardner and Brian Silverman. Our executive producer is Lancia Wan. Thanks for listening.